Okay, it's time again for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, Chris Powell at Gotta.org. Well, last month, Chris Powell, Secretary Treasurer of GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, gave a must-hear presentation to professionals in Europe, and he joins us today with a synopsis of his comments. Welcome back, Chris Powell.
Hey, Chris. Very good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Before we jump into the lecture, the Bundesbank actually did finally receive some gold, some substantial gold repatriation. And maybe you could give us an idea what you think is going on there. Do you think the people have spoken, like in Switzerland and Amsterdam and Venezuela and other countries?
We have to suspect that world central banks are realizing that if they don't have their gold in their hands, if they've entrusted it to another central bank, bullion bank, then they probably don't really own it for practical purposes. The Bundesbank has been trying to repatriate some of its gold, or are purporting to be repatriating some of its gold for the last year and a half or so, largely under pressure of a popular movement in Germany, led by people from the German Precious Metals Society. I don't think the Bundesbank has really wanted its gold back, but I think it has been trying to assuage public opinion. The strange thing about the repatriation has been that it's been so slow. I guess in the first year they managed to get all of 5 tons back. Now they announced they got 120 tons back in 2014. Of course, all of the, whatever it is, I guess, 3,000 tons or whatever it is they want to repatriate, it could be repatriated in a few weeks if anybody really wanted to, you know, put their shoulder to the wheel there. Venezuela got its gold back from the Bank of England in a few months. Obviously, the Bundesbank does not want to do this too fast. Certain observers, I think one for Deutsche Bank, said there were political difficulties for the Bundesbank in recovering its gold from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. But all these central bank gold transactions, Chris, are as obscured as they can be, because central banks do not want the world and the markets to know the true disposition of their gold reserves. The secret staff report of the International Monetary Fund in March 1999, which GATA obtained a copy of a few years ago, showed that Western central banks were afraid to disclose the true disposition of their gold reserves and their gold swaps and leases, because if the markets found out where the gold really was and how short the central banks really were, the central bank interventions in the gold market would be impaired. You know, the true location and disposition of central bank gold reserves are really secrets far more sensitive than the location and disposition of nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are not ever likely to be used, but central bank gold is used every day to rig the markets.
You know, it's an interesting mechanism that they have put in place, whether intentionally or not. I guess that's an entirely separate discussion. So manipulation, and you know, it's almost a cliche, at least in the gold crowd. There's been a lot of figures, I think, thrown around for many years. And sometimes it's hard to wrap one's mind around just what's going on. Can you give us an overview of what you see happening, and maybe take it point by point, please?
For decades, Chris, Western central banks have tried to control the gold price, because gold is a competitive currency with central bank currencies. It's also a determinant of interest rates and government bond prices. Central banks know they have to control gold, or gold in a free market will control them. There's a long-standing U.S. government policy to push gold out of the financial system, to de-recognize it as money, to control the price. This policy is revealed in all sorts of U.S. government documents, memorandum, cables, things like that, on the U.S. government's own internet site. Very frankly, U.S. government policy to subvert gold in order to maintain the dominance of the U.S. dollar as the world currency. The problem is you can't get the mainstream financial press to report on this, because it leads to more and more evidence of central bank intervention in the markets, and eventually you realize there are no markets anymore. There's just interventions. But collecting these documents is what GATA has done. They're all in our documentation file on our internet site. This scheme is becoming more difficult for central banks, because while they have created a vast imaginary supply of gold, paper gold, through derivatives and short selling and mechanisms like that, eventually the real metal that is always needed to underwrite the scheme runs out. It ran out in March 1968 when the London Gold Pool collapsed. The London Gold Pool was a public scheme of dishoarding of Western Central Bank gold reserves to hold the dollar gold price at $35 an ounce. It expired in March 1968 because the gold offtake through the London market was just too much. The Western Central Banks were losing their gold too fast. They withdrew from the London Gold Pool in March 68, and they began to gin up new methods to control the gold price with, and they settled on derivatives and gold swaps, gold leases. But this required them to obscure what they were doing in the market. The gold pool was done in the open. The gold reserve figures back then were accurate and public. But now the central banks create paper gold or underwrite paper gold. They sell gold futures and options and derivatives. This is all documented in the annual reports of the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. That's the central bank of the central bank. It's occasionally documented in central bank announcements themselves. For example, recently the director of market operations of the Banque de France, the French central bank, has been giving speeches to the London Bullion Market Association, saying that Western central banks are managing their gold reserves more aggressively. In September 2013, he told the LBMA that the Banque de France is trading gold for its own account and for the account of other central banks nearly on a daily basis. The fellow who founded the Gold Broker internet site, which sells gold, took me up on a challenge the other day. He wrote to the director of market operations of the Banque de France, Alexandre Gauthier, to ask him about these speeches he'd been given about central bank intervention in the gold market. And Gauthier replied to him cordially that, oh, we never give information about our market activities. All anybody who's interested in the gold market has to do to confirm that central banks are secretly intervening in the gold market every day is to ask them. You have to ask them some specific questions. You can't ask them just, are you rigging the gold market? You have to ask them specific questions like, may we see the record of your gold trading account? May we see the record of your accounts at the Bank for National Settlements? Simply, are you in the gold market or not? If you're in the gold market, is it just for fun, or are there policy purposes here? If you put specific questions to them and they acknowledge your questions, they'll just tell you, as Gauthier told Fabrice Ristori at Gold Broker the other day, is, oh, we don't answer questions like this because they don't want to give the game away. They can't expose their market interventions, because if they do, the interventions will fail. Central bank policy requires deception and secrecy, and really the expropriation of investors, and that's why they won't answer questions. And actually, this is so offensive to me, because it's essentially a totalitarian system. We're supposed to have democratic governments in the United States and other Western countries, accountable government, limited government, but instead we have created these institutions, unelected institutions, that create infinite money and deploy it in secret in the markets to rig the markets, and we can't find out anything about it, at least not with the cooperation of the government. You have to really dig into the archives, dig out secret governments, secret documents, and other information the governments are trying to conceal, and only then do you find out that our whole market economy is an illusion.
This is ubiquitous, this concept of our officials having their fingers in every market. There's no real price discovery. You know, it looks great on paper. You can tinker around with things, and we're going to economically, but you know, that comes at a price. It seems as though if we don't have real markets, there's an end game here that doesn't bode well for the United States and, frankly, around the world. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, well, free markets have been one of the engines of civilization and human progress, Chris. Gold price suppression schemes, immediate victims are developing nations that can advance only by exploiting their natural resources. Every new country starts that way. The United States started that way, selling lumber and furs and fish and agricultural products. Every developing country has to start by developing its natural resources. It does not have a sophisticated banking system or technological sector. Those countries are the immediate victims of the gold price suppression scheme, the commodity price suppression scheme. But here in the United States, the center of the empire, really the originator of the gold price suppression scheme, we are victims of it too, because we lose our democracy and we lose our markets. Even certain central bankers are describing central bank market rigging policy as what they call financial repression. We have lost our markets, and since we can't see what our central banks are doing, we are losing our democracy. Since central banks are empowered to create infinite money, they are now controlling, in secret, the valuation of all capital, labor, goods, and services in the world. That's a totalitarian system. These values ought to be determined in the open in a democratic way, preferably through free markets. But we're letting the financial unelected elite control these values, and it's a totalitarian system. Now, you mentioned conspiracy theory. In the first place, we deal with conspiracy fact. We collect documents, records, admissions from central bankers, much of this material still on central bank and government archives, that show that what we're talking about is not mere conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy fact. Secondly, the word conspiracy is completely proper here. For example, the European Central Bank, by its own admission, by the records it is posted on its own internet site, admits that its board has met at least four times in the last 15 years or so to consider the European Central Bank's policy in the gold market. That's what the Central Bank Gold Agreements and their various incarnations have been about. Every time the European Central Bank has announced a renewal of their central bank gold agreement, it has been after secret meetings of the heads of the European central banks consulting in secret to settle upon a course of action and implement that policy. That is, by definition, conspiracy. When the European central bank gathers its board members to meet in secret, they don't invite you and they don't invite me. There's no public observance of that meeting at all. It's not announced in advance, and nobody's invited to the meeting. That is conspiracy. When, for example, the G10 Gold and Foreign Exchange Committee meets and gathers Treasury and central bank officials from the developed world to discuss their policies in the gold market, it doesn't announce where it's meeting. It doesn't announce when. That's conspiracy, secret gathering of government officials to decide upon and implement a course of action. So I don't understand all this sneering about conspiracy theory. Government, to a great extent, is by definition conspiracy whenever it operates in secret. Nevertheless, the documents we've collected show that we're not talking about conspiracy theory. We're talking about conspiracy fact.
This is obviously not just something that's been occurring in the last 15 years since GATA has been monitoring it, at least officially. You know, I mean, we can go back to at least 100, 120 years. You might recall Samuel Clemens. I know you're a fan of his work, History Never Repeats Itself. It rhymes. You might recall the operations of Gould and Fisk, and of course, then the President Ulysses S. Grant reportedly manipulated the gold markets, and it led to a terrible devastation for thousands of investors and speculators. It's a theme that has been persistent for quite some time. And my guess is you'd say it's far more pervasive and prevalent today than it was even back then.
We have much more sophisticated mechanisms of market rigging today, but it goes back in the United States even a little earlier than that, Chris. If you read Gene Strauss's biography of J.P. Morgan, the original J.P. Morgan, the banker, not the bank that took its name from him, Strauss recalls that back in, I believe it was 1862, the first big score that J.P. Morgan made in the markets in the United States was a gold corner on Wall Street during the Civil War. So, cornering markets, rigging markets is really basic history in a market economy. We have to guard against it. Probably market rigging was the first thing that developed when free markets developed. But we have antitrust law, we have competition laws in order to try to maintain free markets. The problem is, in many circumstances, they're not enforced because the financial elites don't want them enforced, and they bring their political influence to bear on the government not to enforce it. And the other problem about not enforcing antitrust law is that the government itself is exempt from antitrust law. In the United States, the Gold Reserve Act specifically authorizes the U.S. Treasury Department through the Exchange Stabilization Fund to intervene secretly, not only in the gold market, but as the act was amended in the 1970s, the Exchange Stabilization Fund is now authorized to intervene secretly in any financial instrument market in the country or abroad. You can look this up on the Treasury Department's own internet site. Go to the Treasury Department's internet site and search for Exchange Stabilization Funds. Very candid page on the Treasury Department's internet site. The Exchange Stabilization Fund is explicitly authorized to rig any market in secret. And the United States is not unique in this respect. In the United Kingdom, they have something called the Exchange Equalization Account. I don't think in the UK the Exchange Equalization Account is formally authorized to do quite as much rigging as the Exchange Stabilization Fund is authorized to do in the United States. But they've got one too. From the comments that the Bank of France Market Operations Director gave to Fabrice Ristori a few days ago, where he said, we never explain what we're doing in the markets. I imagine that France has a similar authorization for its central bank to intervene in markets secretly and to rig prices. They're doing it anyway, so I assume they must have the legal authority for it. So, we only imagine that we have free markets here in the West. If you have a sophisticated central banking system, odds are you don't have any free markets anymore.
But, manipulation has a tendency for blowback and ultimately for the pendulum to swing back in a fearsome manner.
Market intervention, suppression of markets, very often does result in shortages and rationing. That's really what led to the end of the London gold pool in March 1968. There's a funny story on the Reuters news service this week about the tampon shortage in Argentina, because Argentina has imposed a lot of foreign trade controls in order to protect its very meager foreign exchange funds left, and now there's a huge shortage of various things in Argentina, including the tampons, so that market interventions do tend to result in shortages and rationing. But they don't blow up by themselves, and when they blow up, they don't necessarily restore free markets. I am afraid that when the rig is exposed and it ends in regard to gold and other things central banks are tampering in right now, we may not end up with free markets. We may end up with more what the central bankers call financial repression. When they can't rig the markets surreptitiously anymore, they may outlaw the markets. They may impose rationing. They may impose capital controls. They may take control of financial accounts. The blowing up of the rig does not necessarily mean freedom. It very likely means much more repression. At least the government will come out in the open and start repressing people and repressing markets and interfering with supplies of product. But at least then, if they do that, we'll know what's happening. And I suppose that would be preferable for me to the system we have now, where many people are deceived. But market rigging tends to blow up, but the result is not necessarily liberation. There could be more repression.
You point out that the French Central Bank, or at least some of the officials there, intercede in the gold market on virtually a daily basis. If that's going on, just imagine what's happening with the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve. Give us an idea on just how pervasive this is and what it might mean.
I'm sure that all the major central banks in the world, even the ones in Asia who are, you know, not necessarily great allies of the Western central banks, are certainly aware of and to some extent involved in the gold price suppression scheme. We know that the Russians have been aware of it at least since 2004. That's when the deputy director of the Bank of Russia, the Russian Central Bank, Oleg Mazeyskov, gave a speech to an LBMA meeting in Moscow, in which the only words of English he spoke were "Gold Antitrust Action Committee." Now, we'd had no contact, to our knowledge, with anyone in Russia as of that point. So the Russians were following our work as early as 2004. We know that commentaries about gold price suppression by Western central banks often appear in the government-controlled press in China. So we know that, you know, China knows all about it. I surmised just after the great gold price smash in April 2013, China must have been complicit in that. Everybody had been saying prior to April 2013 that there was a Chinese put in the gold market. You could, you know, safely buy gold because China was, you know, going to be supporting the price. Well, you know, after the big smash on, I think it was April 12th and 15th, 2013, where the gold prices knocked down, I think, a few hundred dollars in a very short time through enormous paper gold selling. Well, what happened to the Chinese put there? It obviously disappeared if there was one. The Chinese foreign exchange reserve, estimated at the equivalent of $4 trillion, long has been so large that China has been able to control any market it wanted to control by intervening, buying, or selling. So I deduced after that smash in April 2013 that China must have been at least complicit in the gold price smash back then, very possibly because they wanted to obtain more gold cheaply prior to a resetting of general world currency values. About the same time, a couple of U.S. economists who were also fund managers, Paul Brodsky and Lee Quaintance, wrote a paper. In fact, they may have written this paper even before the Chinese, before the April 2013 gold smash. Brodsky and Quaintance wrote a paper speculating that the real central bank game here was to redistribute world gold supplies more fairly among the major countries, redistributing it from the creditor nations, from the debtor nations to the creditor nations, so that the creditor nations like China would be able to hedge their U.S. dollar exposure with hard assets. Jim Rickards, who is a fund manager, a former lawyer for long-term capital management, former holder of U.S. Defense Department security clearance, and a frequent commenter in the news media, has been saying for some time now that based on his contacts and intelligence agencies and International Monetary Fund and central banks, that the game is indeed what Brodsky and Quaintance hypothesized a few years ago, to hold the gold price down long enough to allow the creditor nations, particularly China, to obtain gold cheaply to hedge their dollar exposure with, and that when China has enough gold that it thinks can hedge its dollar exposure, they will let the gold price go. They'll stop ringing the gold market, if only because the gold will be exhausted. The currencies will be devalued, and gold will make its reappearance as the financial asset par excellence, and the price of gold will be reset by agreement among central banks to a much higher level. Now, the problem I have with Rickards is that he doesn't really give attribution for all these things. All the sources he's talking about are not named. On the other hand, the guy is obviously brilliant. He has connections. He was a participant in a Defense Department war game, economic war game, I think 6 or so years ago. He's had U.S. Defense Department securities, security clearance. He's been to a lot of places, and I know he's talked to a lot of people. I know him a little bit, and I follow his work and his assertions very closely. And while I'm a journalist and I have to suspect anybody who makes very serious assertions without giving sources by name, I think what Rickards is saying is it matches my own observations. It matches the observations of Brodsky and Quaintance, and I think it's more than plausible. I think what he's saying is probable, which means that all the major central banks are in on the gold price suppression scheme, and that they are, as Brodsky and Quaintance speculated a few years ago, working to redistribute the world's gold supplies so that the dollar creditor nations are hedged when the dollar is devalued.
It's certainly an intriguing scenario you've outlined. For instance, isn't it interesting, this skyrocket in the price of the greenback, all while the yellow metal has obviously retraced substantially from its 2011 peak? That would present a unique opportunity for a central bank which does not disclose, at least not on a regular basis, its gold reserves to accumulate en masse. Bill Murphy has pointed out here on the show that you made a special trip to China and obviously presented your outlook there. I mean, you must have a clear idea, at least better than most of us.
I've spoken a few times at conferences in Hong Kong, and I've been told that certain influential people attended. If they did, I don't know who they were. I've had no direct contact with anyone, to my knowledge, at the People's Bank of China. I have talked to certain other central banks in Asia, and even as I have to admit that most of the central banks I've asked to talk to don't even acknowledge my my mail, even when I send it to International Express. But I do know, Chris, from the government-controlled news organizations in China, whose reports were cabled back to the State Department in Washington from the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. I know from those cables, which were disclosed a couple of years ago by the WikiLeaks organization, that the government of China knows all about the Western gold price suppression scheme. It is a frequent topic in the Chinese financial press, and I know also that the U.S. government knows that China knows, because those Chinese government press reports were cabled back from the U.S. Embassy to the State Department of Washington. So China knows, and the U.S. government knows that China knows. And all these documents and others are posted on Gata's Internet site and in the documentation section. And I really urge anybody who doubts the general outline of what Gata says to look at those documents and let us know if any of them are forgeries or if any of them are being misconstrued. And I really find no one in the mainstream financial press and no one in the financial industry is interested at all in discussing those documents.
The People's Bank of China's U.S. dollar reserves are clearly a monumental vulnerability that we have here. Do you see them pulling the nuclear trigger? Would they play that card in the future, and what might that mean for the market?
Well, you know, the old, you know, saying, if, you know, you owe the bank $1,000, you got a problem. If you owe them $1 billion, they got a problem. I am not one of those people who thinks that the People's Bank of China is so smart. I think to amass a foreign exchange surplus almost entirely in U.S. dollars, I think they are just as much at the mercy of the United States as the United States is at the mercy of China. You know, Rickards has said, you know, both countries are kind of in a delicate dance here. The United States doesn't want China to dump the dollars and the treasuries, and you know, China doesn't want them to go down in value until China's been able to hedge them. So, Rickards has argued, and I've argued, others have argued that the game here is really a cooperation between the United States and China to allow China to gradually obtain enough gold and hard assets to hedge its U.S. dollar exposure against the day when the dollar has to be devalued. When that will come, I don't know. I'm sure I'll be as surprised as anybody else. But I don't think that the Chinese were so smart to you know, tie so much of their fortune into the U.S. dollar. I think they woke up to this problem rather late.
I wonder if you could give folks an idea of what it is that you see that makes this time in market history, if you will, different from, let's say, 1980 to the year 2000. You know, after a big peak in the precious metals, a lot of people have lost some of their enthusiasm. But my guess is that fundamentally, at least some gray swans for every investor to take note of.
My value, if I have any in this field, is simply as the archivist of the records, Chris, or maybe my ability as a journalist to pick up more quickly, maybe than some others do, on contradictions and consistencies. As a financial analyst, I think I have very, very little to offer the world. But you know, there are certain indications that are implied by the documents that GATA has collected, and probably the foremost among them is that there is a huge naked short position in investment-grade gold in the world, that the paper gold of the world outweighs the real metal in the investment world by, you know, a huge factor. It's been estimated 50 to 1 or even 100 to 1. Most of the investment-grade gold that the investment world thinks it owns almost certainly does not exist. Now, if central banks are beginning to realize that their gold outside their vaults has probably been, you know, hypothecated and rehypothecated and compromised, and they want to repatriate it, if they realize that the dollar and the currencies are going to have to be devalued, and indeed are already being devalued, then there is going to be a move toward obtaining physical gold. And if there is a move toward physical in circumstances where there is a huge imbalance between the physical and the paper, that of course implies a much higher price for the physical. I think that will happen someday. It will happen, I don't know, maybe it'll happen when central banks lose control, or more likely when they realize they're about to lose control and they try to get in front of the gold issue by revaluing gold themselves. I think that's really what's most likely to happen, that someday we will you know, be just about to go to bed here in the West, and we'll turn on the 11 o'clock news on a Sunday night, and we'll find out that the major central bankers have been meeting in Switzerland or somewhere, and they're announcing a new currency system or a new currency valuation that involves gold at a much higher price. So these things happen every 30 or 40 years or so. Anyway, sometimes they involve gold and sometimes they don't. But I think central banks, rather than lose control of their rigging completely, will probably realize that the shorting of gold can no longer be sustained, that there's too much demand for real metal, and that gold has to be revalued at a much higher price. And central banks, I think, will want to be seen to be the ones doing it, so people think that the central banks are still in control, that the markets has not taken control. And I think that's what we will see someday. I don't know if I will live long enough to see that day. I hope I do, because that day will be, I think, a mark of a little bit of the failure of the totalitarian system. Unfortunately, I think when they revalue gold upward, it will simply be the first day of the next 50 years of gold price suppression at a higher, more sustainable level.
Interesting. And one really wonders how long that will last, because just as we saw the ruble revalue in 7 weeks' time by 100% against gold, gold skyrocketing, folks losing half of their purchasing power, there's precedent. I mean, this could happen, I think, much more abruptly than maybe a lot of top forecasters and analysts are, you know, are expecting.
Oh, yeah, major things like this have to be done overnight. The fiat system cannot survive a sustained withdrawal. It'll build into an avalanche. If gold is going to be revalued substantially, it will happen overnight. Look what happened with the Swiss National Bank's repudiation of its euro peg. I mean, the exchange value of the Swiss franc for went up 40%. There have been whole brokerage houses that have been ruined, bankrupted by this move. This is disgraceful. This is expropriation. This is treachery. It's betrayal. The Swiss National Bank, really almost until hours before it repudiated the euro peg, it was swearing that it would keep it forever.
Well, but weren't they really front-running, though, the upcoming ECB meeting, the European ministers?
They very well may have been, and I'm sure they feel they were forced into it. Nevertheless, they were telling you, they were telling me, they were telling, you know, your broker and everybody else that, oh, no, this policy is irrevocable. We're going to keep it forever. And the people made investment decisions based on that solemn pledge. And, it's another reason against central banking, at least as it is conducted in the West today, which is completely in secret by people who are not elected.
No, exactly. I mean, rehypothecation, I think, is going to be a term with many different monikers in the years to come. We've seen it pop up all over the world, beginning, I think, with Cyprus, running through Europe, and now much of the legislation from Canada, the U.S., and all around the globe has this nefarious verbiage written into it. Borrowers and lenders, everybody has the potential to wake up, as you say, and find out the terms have been changed.
Listen, there is not one nominally democratic country and not one parliament, Congress in a nominally democratic country that has any idea of the full range of interventions being undertaken right now by their own central banks. And you can't maintain a democracy when you don't know what such a powerful agency is doing. And you don't have a democracy when this secretive unelected agency can change economic values on you by 40% or 100% overnight. That's not a democratic system.
Chris Powell, as we wrap up, I wonder if you might share any parting comments that you have with listeners today. You have, you know, a wealth of knowledge, and I'm sure there might just be one or two other topics that you'd like to leave with the listeners.
I'd like to tell them to send money. We're broke. The monetary metals industry and its investors have been devastated over the last 3 years, and they were the primary donors to GATA. We are a nonprofit civil rights and educational organization. We have tax-exempt status in the United States under Section 501(c)(3) of the U.S. Internal Revenue Code. Donations to GATA in the United States are federally tax deductible for people. And we really could use a little help because our operations, other than running our mouths on the telephone, are about to come to a halt because our treasury is close to being below ordinary operating expenses on a month-to-month basis. If people are if they've got anything, their listeners have got anything left, and I would understand completely if they did not, because we don't, and they feel like helping, I would thank them for going to our internet site, gata.org, and looking for the How to Help button on the left-hand side of the page, and they could make donations by credit card over the internet or check or Bitcoin, or if they want, they could even mail cash to my house, and I promise I'll put it in our account in the bank.
Very good. Well, support the good guys, and you all have certainly spent at least the last 15 years or so to try to disseminate the truth and the information that we all need. So please help support Gata.org, Bill Murphy and Chris Powell, and everything they do. We want to thank you for taking time today and look forward to having you back on GoldSeek.com radio, sir.
Oh, my pleasure, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant cave KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.